Court, Mr. Barry Alfred to argue for the appellate, Mr. Joshua Llewellyn to argue for the state.
Thank you, counsel. You may proceed.
May it please the court. First off, I just want to apologize to the court for my tardiness. I have no excuse. I apologize to everyone here for keeping you waiting. If it please the court, before I go into the argument, I think it's important in a case like this to go through the procedural history of the case. It's very important. I think it helps tie in my argument. This is a case in which the appellant was on trial for a felony in Tarrant County. He was also, at the time, serving a sentence in the state of Ohio for a different offense. When the state filed the case in December of 2019, appellant was still in penitentiary in Ohio serving his sentence. He, on his own, filed on the January the 23rd a request under the Interstate Agreement and Detainers Act. Basically, what that does, it starts the clock running, saying, basically, I want to be tried, I need my case tried within 180 days. So that started that clock rolling. However, there was a problem that came up, and that is on March the 12th, because of the COVID-19 virus, the courts suspended trials. There were no trials at that time. A few days later, on March the 16th, appellant was brought to Tarrant County and appointed counsel. June the 8th, the next important date, appellant agreed to a continuance, again, because of the COVID-19 virus. The court date on June the 10th until July the 13th. That's a span of 33 days. That's important. I'm going to explain to you why in just a few minutes. On June the 15th, appellant filed an announcement of ready and consent to jury trial. Even though there were no jury trials, he still filed a notice saying we are ready for trial. July the 13th, state files its second motion for continuance. And this case is continued then until, they said a tentative trial date of September the 14th, which now is 63 days. Again, these dates are important. I'll explain to you why in a little bit. The court found good cause and continued the case until, again, September the 14th of 2020. The state then assured the court that they were ready to try the case by September the 14th. So now at this time, both sides have announced on the record that even though there are no jury trials, that they will be ready for trial when and if we start trying cases again. Okay, so then the defendant, or the appellant, files his motion to dismiss. This is based on the original expiration of the IEDA 180 days, which was, again, July the 21st, 2020. So on July the 30th, he filed his motion to dismiss for IED violation. They had a hearing, and the trial court actually granted that motion without prejudice. That would give, of course, the state time to leave if they want to file leave to reconsider, which they did the following day. And the judge did have another hearing. And they had another hearing. And at this time, the judge found because of these continuances that were given earlier, it actually told the statute. So that puts now we've got the date at October the 25th, 2020. This case has got to be tried by October the 25th, 2020, and for the court's edification, that is a Sunday. It's going to come into play a little later. So now we've got a 180-day period of October the 25th, 2020. On October the 8th, this is a very important day. October the 8th, the regional administrative judge approved a plan for conducting jury trials. So now we're back to where if the trial court will submit a plan that you can actually have jury trials. This date is 17 days prior to the October the 25th cutoff date that we talked about earlier. So we got October the 8th to October 25th. We got 17 days to get this case tried. 4 days after the plan was put into place, the district judge issued a plan to the trial court, to the administrative judge, saying, I want to submit a plan. And the reason you have to do this is because of COVID, you've got to space people out. There's a lot of considerations you have to do. One thing that I think I noted, and this is part of the record, that part of her plan was to try this case on October the 26th. Again, we've got a space of 17 days. This case could have been tried, a pending court approval by the administrative judge at any time. Counsel. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. So does the IADA require the trial just be commenced by the 180th day or finished?
Commenced, Your Honor. So they, my understanding is from our reading of it is when you start jury selection, that can toll that.
Do you not disagree, or at least would you concede, that appellant's trial counsel did in fact at one point say that that they had no objections to that plan?
They had no objection to the plan. Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. You are correct. However, they did not say that they had no objection to the date. They had no objection to the plan, as in other words, the plan meaning how you're going to space people out, whether they're going to wear masks or how that's the plan. They had no objection to the plan. His objection, if I may, Your Honor, is that he had an objection. Well, he didn't specifically say he objected to the date, but the fact that he didn't consent to it, I'll put it that way.
Well, I'll agree that the plan would be very general and would encompass a lot of things, including the seating plan and everything else. But within that very general plan, there were also dates that were delineated. And one of those dates was, in fact, that the trial would commence on the 26th, correct?
My reading of the record, correct me if I'm wrong, Your Honor, but my recollection of the record was that the original plan, the district judge had it in her plan for October the 26th. Now, then she later had a revised plan. I'm not sure, the record's not really clear why we had the original plan and the revised plan, but the revised plan was not approved until the 23rd, meaning they couldn't start until the 26th. But my understanding, Your Honor, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the original plan, the district judge said, I want trial to start on the 26th, knowing very well that we've got a small window of 17 days to get this case tried. My thought is, why not get this case tried the week before?
Well, but since October 25th, which everybody agrees was the 180th day, was a Sunday, don't the rules say that if a deadline falls on a weekend, that it rolls over to the next business day?
You are correct, Your Honor. You're absolutely correct. My argument is, why even put ourselves in that situation when we could have very well tried the case the week before? Because it's my understanding, again, from the record, correct me if I'm wrong, that the trial judge's original plan just said we're going to try the case on the 26th.
On what basis could it have been tried the week before when the local administrative judge and the regional judge had not actually approved the plan? They'd approved a general plan, but were they not still required to approve a specific plan for specific trials, which had not been given until the Friday the 23rd before the 26th?
My understanding, and again, I may be wrong, I'm reading the record, but my understanding was that they could give a revised plan. You're correct. The revised plan was not approved until the 23rd. That was the Friday before. But it's my understanding that the original plan could have been put in place and tried. I don't know why they revised the plan. I know there was an original plan in place, and my understanding it was approved, and it could have been. My understanding is we could have tried this case before.
What plan would you be able to get notices to potential jurors who up until that point in time were not being called to the jury room in 17 days to get down there for the purpose of picking a jury on the first day of trial?
Yes, Your Honor, and my response would be like this. I understand we're going through the middle of COVID, but Tarrant County calls jury panels every day, or at least they did prior to COVID. And so my argument would be that they call jury panels every day. They could get a panel if they wanted, assuming there's a plan in place, and get the case tried prior to.
But that's the whole linchpin, isn't it? I mean, there had to have been a plan in place.
Correct.
And approved.
Yes, Your Honor. Anyway, my argument is that I feel that they could have tried the case beforehand. I want to get right into my argument now. So the state makes several arguments. First argument is that, again, he was unable to stand trial prior to October the 26th. I think I've already addressed that. My argument is that given the 17 days, I believe, and with, again, given a plan in place, that we could have tried this case prior to the 25th, or I guess the 23rd, given that the 25th was on a Sunday. My argument is this. Appellant did everything he was supposed to do. He gave in his notice for the IADA for the 180 days. He filed his motion to dismiss when that time was expired. He filed his second motion to dismiss, haven't got to that yet. On the 26th, the morning of trial, he filed his second motion to dismiss. Appellant's done everything he's supposed to do within his control. Now, obviously, there are some things that are not in his control. Obviously, COVID is nobody's control. But given the fact that he has done everything he's supposed to, it's our argument that this case could have and should have been tried prior to the week, I guess that would be the week of the 17th, 18th, whatever week that was, the week before. Assuming you get the plan in place, let's get the case tried. And we don't have to worry about whether it's a Sunday and you go into the next day or not. Our other argument is that there was no motion for continuance. That's another one of our arguments, is that no one filed a motion for continuance after September the 17th, I believe it was. No motion for continuance was given. It's done sua sponte by the court. Our argument to that would be, we've already announced that we're ready. Why on earth would we want to agree to a continuance when we've already, and the state also has announced ready?
Look, let me jump real quick.
Yes, sir.
You're running out of time. You only have 4 minutes left. You know, I see that as your big argument. And then you rely on the IAPA itself and the four factors that are there. And basically, you put in your brief that, you know, obviously, that the court did not have the ability to just sua sponte issue a continuance or extend it. However, you know, the IAD, once you concede, doesn't actually say that. It doesn't say that you cannot do that, that a trial court cannot do a sua sponte continuance.
You're correct, Your Honor. I would say that there was no good cause reason for the court to sua sponte do that. When both sides have announced ready for trial, you've got the regional administrative judge saying on October 8th, we can start trying cases, submit your plan. There was no good faith reason or good cause for the court to, on their own, ask for a continuance when both sides have conceded. They've said they're ready for trial.
Well, let me ask you a slightly different question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Forget about COVID. In the normal IADA deadline case, do you have any authority for the idea that if the 180th day runs on a weekend, for whatever reason, that a trial that starts the following Monday is considered to be timely?
I would agree with you, Your Honor. I absolutely agree. In fact, the local rules, all the rules say if it falls on a weekend or a holiday, it goes to the next business day. You are absolutely correct.
And I also wanted to give you an opportunity to respond if you care to. If the two cases that the state submitted to us by a letter brief on the 23rd, if you find either of those significant to your legal arguments, welcome your distinguishing them.
I can't distinguish them. I would just fall back on my previous argument that given this short time period we had to get this case tried, and the fact that both sides have announced ready, we were just saying that there was no reason to ask for a continuance. This case should have been tried prior. Unless any of the panel has any more questions, I'll yield to them.
Well, you have 2 minutes left, and I'm pretty sure the state is going to rely heavily on the Hill case that they referenced in their brief. And I mean, you don't have to do it, but it really seems on point. And I was curious as to what your position would be as to why. Is there a way that you could distinguish it? Why would you say that case is not on point with the facts that we have in this country?
Your Honor, I'm not saying it's not on point. My argument is simply that, and again, if you're talking about getting the case tried in a timely fashion, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not saying the case is not on point. I'm just saying that I believe the case could have been tried given the fact that both sides were ready. And given the fact that the administrative judge has said we can try these cases.
And I see that, but the problem I would have with that line of thinking is there's no mentioning of that whatsoever to the trial court until it happened on the 26th.
That's correct.
Which in some way seems like it was jockeying for position. It was kind of a gotcha thing. We're going to wait till 180 days has passed, and then we're going to say we have a problem.
My response to that would be that if you do it beforehand, it's premature. If you file it, say, the Friday before, I mean, the 180 days has not run. So I think you've got to wait. In fact, like they did in the first motion to dismiss, you have to wait until the actual 180 days is actually run, then you file it. Because if you file it prematurely, then the court can always say, well, it's not run.
Okay.
Does anyone else want to have any questions? Thank you very much. And again,
thank
I apologize
you.
For the delay.
Thank you. That's all. You're from the state.
May it please the court, my name is Joshua Llewellyn, and I represent the state. The question for this court to consider is not whether the trial could have been tried earlier, depending on whether the judge or the attorneys burn the midnight oil trying to get trial to happen earlier or something in the jury plan. The question is whether it was tried within the deadline. And in this case, it was for several reasons. Now, appellant concedes that the trial court properly held that the IAD deadline was told until October 25th, that Sunday. So the narrow question for this court to consider is whether the trial court violated the IAD by commencing trial one day later on Monday, October 26th. Now, I think, like opposing counsel, that it is a good idea to go through the timeline to demonstrate how we get to the October 25th trial date. And I think it's easier to think of it like a countdown clock. The state received the appellant's IAD request on January 23rd, 2020. At that time, there were 180 days on that countdown clock, and it counted down day for day after they received that request. On June 10th, that is when the case was originally set, in which the defendant agreed to a resetting. The agreed resetting, as established by what the trial court ruled, tolls the statutory deadline, so the case is paused at that point. The countdown clock is paused. At that point, 139 days had elapsed. That means the state, on June 10th, had 41 days to try the case.
In other words, to the extent that the defendant agrees to any extension within the 180 days, that extension is told that it doesn't count on the 180 days because the defendant's agreed to that time.
That's correct, Your Honor. So at that point, the countdown clock was stopped and the case was set again on July 13th. So ordinarily, on July 13th, the state has 41 days to try the case. Ordinarily, the countdown clock would resume. But at that point, the trial court granted a necessary and reasonable continuance under Article 3 of the IAD. And because of that, the clock remained paused. And that continuance was granted until September 14th. So on September 14th, the state still had 41 days to try the case. Now, 41 days after September 14th is October 25th. And that's how we arrive at that October 25th date. Now, what happened after that was both Judge Westfall, the initial court trial judge on the case, and Judge Berry, the one who actually sat during trial, ruled that the period of time during which the court was actively trying to get jury trial approved after that continuance date had expired, the defendant was unable to stand trial. Article 6 of the IAD states that the IAD deadline shall be told whenever and for as long as the prisoner is unable to stand trial as determined by the court having jurisdiction of the matter. And at that point, the defendant was literally unable to stand trial because jury trial had not yet been approved under the emergency guidelines.
And that's what you're all together now. That's what your cases from Maine and Alabama essentially held?
Yes.
That satisfies the unable to stand trial aspect of the IADA?
Yes, Your Honor. And at the point that I had filed my brief, that Maine case had not been out yet because the courts are working through these IAD problems on appeal. But because that period of time was told, and as Judge Berry found on the day of trial, the jury trial was not approved for October 26th until Friday evening, the Friday before trial started.
But that depends upon what the phrase unable to stand trial is, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And first, I need to disassociate myself from David Birdwell. It's not related as far as I know, but in Birdwell versus Steen, the circuit held that unable is physical or mental incapacity. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I would not use the term that the court held. The court in that case stated...
Well, let me correct myself then. The court held that in 15 cases before the enactment of the IAPA in 1970, that phrase meant, as far as the federal courts are concerned, physical or mental incapacity.
Correct.
Okay. But
yes, Your Honor.
The court didn't say, so it basically was saying that's what Congress was looking at, how that had been worked out in the federal courts before it enacted, and presumptively was using that understanding of unable to stand trial.
I'm not sure if the court mentioned Congress's intent when enacting the statute, but what the court did say was, and this is a quote, the phrase was consistently and only used by federal courts to refer to a party's physical or mental ability to stand trial. And in the case before it, it was unwilling to extend that meaning to court needing additional time to rule on defense motions, basically. In that case, the state was arguing that the defendant filed all these motions before trial, the court didn't have time to do it, and therefore the IAD deadline should have been told by those motions. The court was unwilling to extend the definition of unable to stand trial to encompass that situation in the case before it.
So what would have happened as far as the IADA timeline if the regional administrative judge had not approved the trial plan on October 23rd? Would it have automatically extended to some point past October 26th?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the trial court still could have made a finding because Article 6 says that it shall be told for as long as the prisoner is unable to stand trial as determined by the court having jurisdiction of the matter. But as Judge Westfall found in her findings of fact and conclusions of law, as long as we're still trying to get jury trial approved and he can't stand trial, he's unable to stand trial under the IAD. So as long as that period lasted, the deadline was told. And because of that, the period between September 14th and October 25th was told. That means on October 26th, the state still had 41 days to try the case. Now, I made a small calculation error in my brief when I stated that I basically calculated a tolling period from the time the trial court started pursuing the jury trial, which was September 11th. Problem with that is I counted September 11th through September 14th twice because the trial court granted a continuance to September 14th. You wouldn't count the days twice, but that would put the deadline at around December 5th. And the trial was commenced well within that deadline. Now, an alternative reason for this court to affirm the trial court is that Judge Berry found that there was good cause for a necessary and reasonable continuance under the IAD up until that date trial occurred. Now, the appellant states that there wasn't really good cause for trial to take place on that date because it could have happened a week earlier, for instance. But this is completely contrary to the attorney's argument at the time he was arguing his motion to dismiss in the trial court. At that time, he said, well, we're filing this motion to dismiss because no continuance was granted up to this point. And we can see that, sure, there may have been good cause for a continuance, but we still think it needs to be dismissed because no continuance was filed.
Yeah, and that's the big deal here. I mean, that's their whole point, is that there was a sua sponte granting of a continuance. And I mean, you quote Bergwolf, and there's some good language in there for their side, you have to concede, in that, you know, the problem you have with continuances potentially that are given for maybe a lack of reasoning or a lack of justification may ultimately cause the IAD to be a nullity. And that's a problem. That's this tension that we're dealing with in this whole case. What do you think about that? What do you have to say about that?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. And I think the Bergwell Court was correct to be concerned that, hey, if we're just letting courts sua sponte grant all these continuances and we're just continuing the case on and on because we have a busy docket, that's going to harm the rights of defendants that are granted to them by the IAD. But in this case, that's just not what we have. The record clearly demonstrates that there was good cause for this continuance. And as you mentioned, the court actually acknowledged that when there is good cause in the record, the court can grant a sua sponte continuance. So I think much confusion exists right now in the case law, which conflates the Article 3 necessary and reasonable continuance with the Article 6 tolling of the statutory deadline due to a defendant being unable to stand trial. And right here, the court ruled on both issues. The court found both I think this court, this case actually presents an opportunity for this court to clarify some of those matters. But each of those are independent reasons for the court to affirm. The third point, as the court mentioned to opposing counsel, was that...
Well, let me interrupt. We find that the court, that the statute in Article 3 doesn't contemplate a sua sponte motion, in other words, a motion of the courts itself, then there was no motion before the court with regard to granting continuance. Therefore, there was no tolling with regard to that. Would you agree with that? With regard to that ground.
Yeah, with regard to that ground, yes. But
then we would have to make a determination about Article 6 with regard to unable to stand trial. That would be a separate ground that we need to raise.
Correct, Your Honor. Yes, Article 6 would be a separate ground, and then there are also the other two separate grounds that the court presented in its brief. The third ground was the waiver.
Because the granting of the continuance was done, all the other elements being necessary in front of the defendant and counsel were in front of the court, in open court.
Right.
And it was done by the court, but it was not done based upon the motion instead.
Correct. And as, I don't remember which one it was, but as the court acknowledged earlier, no motion is required by the actual language of the IAD. But here, the defendant...
Well, that's true. It's not specifically enumerated. But I think one of the things that the appellant is kind of at least putting forward or implying is that that there's an implication there, that it's implied that it has to be done, because it has to be done in open court. And there was some kind of, there is a little bit of ambiguity as to, your position is that it was done in open court because the plan was actually executed in open court, or at least it was referenced in open court. But I think one of their positions is that the actual setting of the date itself wasn't done in open court, I believe. And if I'm right, that's kind of where they're going with this. What do you have to say about that?
The court is correct. I think that the actual drafting of the jury plan was not done in open court. Whether the court and the attorneys were corresponding about it, that's something that's not in the record. But you do have that pre-trial hearing where they were addressing all the issues that were leading up to the case. And that is where the court made sure everybody knew this is this is the trial date. It's October 26th, and these are the procedures that we're going to go through.
Do you think, and I mean, you heard him, I assume, and basically his position is that when he said we're okay with the plan or we have no objection to the plan, that doesn't encompass the specific dates. It's simply just the safety aspects of the plan. What do you say about that?
I would say that I think that his general stated lack of objection would apply to everything that they were discussing at that hearing, that he had no objections to the jury plan, which would include the date. But I do agree that in the context of the record, it could be interpreted otherwise.
And if he had actually said, I have no objection to the date specifically, you would have put that in your appellate brief.
Correct, Your Honor. But the problem that the Supreme Court had when it issued a rule of waiver was not that, hey, this guy didn't, he voiced a stated lack of objection. In fact, the reasoning that the court used was argued before the court that an express waiver was needed in order to waive the IAD deadline. What the court said, and this is a quote, such an approach would enable defendants to escape justice by willingly accepting treatment inconsistent with the IAD's time limits and the recanting later on. In light of its potential for abuse, and given the harsh remedy of dismissal with prejudice, we decline to adopt it. So regardless of whether you interpret his stated lack of objection to the jury plan encompass that, whether or not you think it encompassed that date, he still willingly accepted treatment contrary to the IAD's deadlines. And therefore, he still waived his objection under the IAD. And it was mentioned that a motion to dismiss before the IAD deadline expired would have been untimely. But that's not the only motion that could have been filed.
It would have been premature. Let me go back to this argument part, whether or not a motion is contemplated. There is no mention of the word motion in R3 for the zoning continuance, but it does say the trial court shall, quote unquote, grant a continuance. Okay? Usually they use the word grant is in response to some type of relief, and usually relief is something that's requested by one of the parties. So I know there's authority basically indicating that, well, the court can order a continuance or something of that nature, but here, words being used for a grant, which would suggest that maybe somebody's going to have to request the relief so it can be granted to the party who's requesting it. So, any authority one way or the other would cause you to use it?
I haven't read any cases, Your Honor, that specifically deal with the interpretation of the word grant. However, I think the Birdwell Court does suggest, regardless, in that footnote, and I have the quote here too. It says, if the state objects or is unprepared to respond to a defense motion, the trial court sua sponte so that it could adequately review and rule on the motion, or so that the state could prepare a response. Clearly, if good cause exists, i.e., if the state's unpreparedness is not due to a lack of diligence, and again, they were talking about defense motions in that case, the continuance granted will toll the 180-day deadline.
The verbal cuts both ways.
Right.
But in this instance, if a motion is required, because in fact the word grant is being used, then on what basis is there a waiver if there's no motion before the court to object to a part of the criminal defendant?
On what basis? I'm sorry.
In other words, just agreeing and saying the plan looks okay, you're saying that's a complete total waiver. But what if in fact a motion is in fact required and there's no motion? On what basis would a defendant know at that point in time they're supposed to be objecting to a trial setting?
Because a speedy trial right is always a right that you have to pursue. If a defendant, and I use this only for analogy purposes, right, because it's not technically constitutional speedy trial, but if a defendant sleeps on his speedy trial rights, that's considered against him. And here, the defendant was clearly aware of the IAD deadline. And at the time, he had the opportunity to say, hey, court, I really want this case to be dealt with in a timely manner, and that is my right under the IAD. And he could have presented it to the court that way. And it may not be an objection, but it's almost like you see in speedy trial cases where they say, hey, I'm ready. I'm demanding a speedy trial. It's like a speedy trial demand.
And what you're basically saying is, if he had a concern about trying to get his trial, his justice within that timeline, then he could have brought it to the court's attention, and that might have actually furthered the process up. Maybe they could have done something potentially to get it, even though you were dealing with COVID and everything else, and having to get plans approved and everything else. And so this idea that you would wait to actually bring it up until after it's expired, that would be true, and that you wouldn't have a complaint as far as what the law triggers. You could bring it up before then. There's nothing to prevent you from doing so in order to try to get your trial sped up.
Correct, Your Honor. The IAD was meant to give the defendants rights to a speedy trial when they're sitting and awaiting prosecution on this case because they're serving a sentence in another state. It wasn't given just to give them the opportunity to be like, gotcha, you missed your deadline, I'm going to dismiss my case, right? The point of the IAD is, hey, we need to resolve this quickly. So it doesn't help for IAD purposes. It doesn't further the purpose of the IAD to just let a deadline expire and be like, oh, okay, now I want my case dismissed. And that was the Supreme Court's concern. That's why they specifically said we shouldn't allow defendants to escape justice by willingly accepting treatment contrary to the IAD's deadlines.
Yeah, and you've done criminal work for a while, and that's unique language. You don't see that a lot. Treatment, accepting treatment. And earlier you said that it was clear that he had, but it doesn't really define what it's talking about there. That language immediately gives me pause when I read it because it's not something we see a lot in this context. Quickly, if you or you can, well, real quickly, what do you think that that work means in that instance?
I think it means, hey, you didn't object. You didn't say, hey, I want my trial to happen now. And I see that my time is up, so I respectfully request that the court affirm.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to talk briefly again about this phrase, unable to stand trial. And just for clarification, going back to Birdwell, again, neither side, either the state or the defendant, appellant in this case, has requested that continuance in September. And I think one thing I was listening to when counsel for the state was up here, he said, well, you know, if he had only done something to say, I want my trial, but again, we know that he did. On June the 15th of 2020, he filed an announcement of ready and consent to jury trial. This is a part of the record. He made it a part of the record. I want my trial. I'm not asking for any delays unless, you know, we just can't, unless there's for COVID reasons, we can't get things tried. And again, let's go back to the court granting this on their own motion. The problem I have with that is now neither side has a chance in open court to say, Your Honor, I object. That's the problem I have anyway, with the sua sponte motion from the court saying, you know, I find good cause. I think both sides should have the opportunity to express concerns or objections if they want to, and in this case, that we're talking
about. But they were given an opportunity in that the date itself was communicated to appellant in open court in conjunction with the appellant later saying, I have no objections to the plan.
Correct. Again, I go back to the fact that as far as actually wanting the trial, I think I distinguish the plan from the actual, when are we going to try the case? I think those are two separate issues. Sure, they had no problem with the plan, whether that's the seating arrangement, masks, whatever that may be. But that's different from actually, when are we going to get this case tried?
What would have been the alternative with regard to a bench trial in terms of, because you just quoted the defendant said, I consider to a jury trial, the difficulty that COVID presented was the ability to actually see juries. Okay, if you're truly concerned with getting tried so you can go back to prison in Ohio, okay, then he could he have forced the state to do a bench trial, or does the state have the authority to keep it?
Well, Your Honor, that's a good point, but I think both sides have the right to a jury. Number one, both sides have the right to a jury trial, not just the appellant, but the state has
understood,
the right to a jury trial.
But my point is what are we should we be looking at the record to determine where he was making the court clear that in fact the jury trial requirement was going to create a problem.
And I can't speak for trial counsel because I was not a trial counsel. I can only speak for myself, where I have a hesitancy about bench trials. And I mean, there's nothing personal, but that's just the way. I mean, I feel that unless the appellant specifically waives it himself, I would have a hesitancy with a bench trial. That's just me, especially when you've
got. Well, I understood. That's a decision with regard to tactics, et cetera,
right.
Okay? But if in fact he wanted to put this, one of the things that was already in Birdwell is whether or not the state was responsible for the delays. If in fact he had come and said, look, I don't want there to be a delay, I'll go with the bench trial. If at that point in time the state had decided we want to stick with the jury trial, would that not be a delay attributable to the state, which then would not be told?
Well, I guess Your Honor will never know because we don't know whether either side or both would emphatically want a jury trial as opposed to a bench trial, especially when you consider an offense in which a person is facing considerable amount of time in prison. I think those are decisions that, you know, I really can't answer, I guess. You're right. I mean, that is a possibility. If you're coming up to the deadline, maybe we want to consider a bench, but I think, like you said, there are tactical reasons why that may not be feasible. In the last minute I have remaining, I just want to clarify that I think at this point, or at the point through the process, I think appellant has done everything he has done, he was supposed to do, in asking for the 180 days to start, and asking for the motion to dismiss. He did not ask for that last continuance. I believe that appellant has done everything he should have done in order to guarantee that he get a timely trial. And for that reason, we're going to ask the Court of Appeals to reverse. Anyone have any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen, the argument was very helpful. Thank you. The case is now submitted. As you may know, and we've seen counsel from the first argument, you're free to go if you want to. We're going to open up the room to some Q&A, obviously not about the merits of either one of these cases, but just general questions from anyone here. So if you would like to stick around for that, we would welcome you to, but again, you don't have to.